Everyone needs to get a minimum of an hour to 2 hours a week that you act like they're not there. So we've all worked shorthanded. We've all worked with less people on vacation. We're more than willing to do that. We need to structure that into our week.
This is Growth in Dentistry, a dental intelligence podcast, where we ask the question, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? I'm Steve Jensen, a data dental nerd and your host.
Welcome, everyone, to another Growth in Dentistry podcast. I am so excited about today's topic. It is super relevant. We are going to jump into the details of revenue cycle management, and I'll share exactly why here in just a second. But before I jump in, as always, thank you to our listeners that are here week after week after week, and welcome to all the new listeners. If you love this episode, like and subscribe to the podcast. It helps us get the word out there to all of the other awesome people in dentistry that might be looking to solve the exact same problems we're talking about on this podcast. The second thing, a huge shout out to the marketing team at Dental Intelligence for sponsoring this podcast. It is a lot of work to produce a podcast, to get it out there, and to make sure that it's done successfully. And so I'm so grateful for their support in doing this podcast. They always have a special offer. This month is a little different. It's exciting. So they will give you a $50 gift card for getting a demo. So that's like Ben Classic. But you can also get 2 free months of a trial of Swell. Swell is a review platform that helps you get reviews from your patients. So they'll tack that on top if you want to come and check out a demo of Dental Intelligence. Now, that's all I have to start off. So I want to introduce our guest today. But before I do, I said I was going to share the problem. So one of the cool things I get to do is I get to look at the data for the over 10,000 practices that Dental Intelligence works with. One of the numbers I like to track, which normally is super boring, is called accounts receivable days. And that number just simply tells me from the time we complete treatment, on average, how many days does it take for us to collect that money? The reason why that's important is because that can affect payroll and paying bills and leases and purchasing decisions. Just making sure I understand, okay, like, from all the work I'm getting done now, how long does it take before that cash actually hits the business bank account? So when CHC went out back in February, I kind of knew there was going to be this big balloon of issue that was going to happen. Like accounts receivable days was going to get big until we kind of got back into a good place. And we're now in July. So we're months and months away from that thing. And I thought we'd be back down to a normal range. So normal was 28 days. The average practice took 28 days to collect, excuse me, from insurance and from patients. And we are still at 49 days. So we're still like flirting with 2 months to collect. So I thought, hey, I guarantee if there are a bunch of Dental Intelligence practices struggling with this, then the whole market probably is having still a struggle with some of these revenue cycle management issues. And I thought it'd be awesome to get an expert on. So I've got Colleen Huff. Colleen has her own consulting firm. So all she does now is just work on revenue cycle management with practices. But Colleen has been in dentistry for 30 years. This month is when she'll hit 30. She has been a practice administrator. I personally met Colleen a handful of years ago when she was running an ADOM chapter in Buffalo, New York. And she is just one of the sharpest, smartest individuals in dentistry. And I couldn't be more excited to have her come on and talk about how to solve the problem. So Colleen, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for that lovely introduction. And it was great when we had you here in Buffalo. The chapter is still going. It's now, they're calling them DPLNs or whatever. I still call it a study group because that's started. But yeah, the revenue cycle is a big part of what I teach on. You know, the money flow, the insurance, it all comes as part of that. And one of the interesting parts is the industry is really starting to state it as revenue cycle management. We're starting to see the whole picture and really approach things from a more of a business standpoint. The Change Healthcare breach was a explosion to all of us, whether you were using Change Healthcare Clearinghouse or not. It affected payments, it affected EOBs, it affected so many parts of it. And I have to agree with you, you know, we really thought once we got past some of that initial chaos, things would get back to normal. But I was in a practice a few weeks ago that is still having issues getting their accounts receivable back to where it needs to be. Some of that is due to, especially GHA or GHA, as people call it, they're still not where they need to be. All of their entire everything went through Change Healthcare, all of their payments, all of everything, and they haven't quite rebuilt it yet. And then that's happening to a lot of the insurance, a lot of the, they're the main one I'm still hearing that from, but even Guardian. So if your practice is seeing some of that struggle, unfortunately, there's certain things you can do, and there's other things that are still outside of our control. Mm-hmm. But make sure you're being vigilant of keeping track of those, that not just assuming they're not paying it. One of the things I saw, I've got a doctor that I'm started consulting with actually 2 weeks ago, and they're working with an outsourcing company. I won't say who, because I won't be speaking nicely about them. And I noticed when I looked at his outstanding insurance claims, anything that was GEHA, they haven't touched them in 2 months because they're just going under that assumption of they haven't worked them. And that's the easy way out, but we have to make sure that we're still, those insurance companies, you know, those of us that make the most noise sometimes are going to be the ones to get it taken care of. And so the struggle right now is how much time do we spend on the phone? How much do we pursue it? And how much do we just sit back and go, okay, it's out of our control. And my response to that is we still have to follow up. You have to call, you have to get online. One of the other struggles I see happen is a lot of people in the industry don't quite understand what a clearinghouse does or how it works in their software. And so for those of you that are newer, you know, the clearinghouse is who it's like the post office picking up your mail, but it goes to that clearinghouse first, and then they send it on to, through a variety of ways, to your insurance company. And one of the things that I discovered is the number of people that didn't even know who their clearinghouse was. So anytime you're new to an office, you need to find those things out. You need to know who your claims are going through. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason you need
I'll share this. So the three big ones are Change Healthcare. Everyone knows that name now because they went down. And right. Dentrix and Eagle, was it Dentrix and Eaglesoft? Both, I think, were using that one natively
yes,
as like
they
a primary.
Were.
So that
yes,
caused a ton
were.
Of problems. And then there's Dental Exchange. Yep. And then there's Tasia. And Tasia is owned by a company called Vine. And at Dental Intelligence, we're actually partnered with Vine. So you can yep. use that clearinghouse, Tasia, just inside of the Dental Intelligence platform to push insurance claims through. One other thing I'll comment too that I think is interesting for people to note is each of those three clearinghouses, if you send a claim to them and they try to push it out and it fails, they've used each other as like backstops. Mm-hmm. So like if you try pushing it through Tasia and they can't get it through, then they'll forward it to Dental Exchange or Change Healthcare. So I've even seen issues where like some of the Medicaid mm-hmm. plans that are like regional, I mean, I guess they all are, but like some of those regional plans, they used to work through Tasia because they were forcing them, you know, through Change Healthcare. And now they're not going through. So like being aware, just like stuff that worked in the past, whether that's checking eligibility or pushing the claim through, might not work the same today. So just aware, like it's good to do like a quick audit just to make sure like, hey, there might be, if you don't have like a visual dashboard of your claims, there might be some claims that are getting stuck out in la-la land that used to work, but maybe don't now because we're still not back up all the way yet.
Right. Well, and then along that point, the other thing that happens is you put in what's considered the electronic claim payer ID or the claim payer ID, mm-hmm. and Dental Exchange has different claim payer IDs than Change Healthcare or Vine Trellis, yep. but most people know it other than Tasia. So it may look like it's going through, and then if it doesn't end up on the other end, don't just automatically resend it, or you have to figure out, and sometimes what I'm finding is there's offices that they've spent 4 months trying to get a claim paid, and they didn't realize that, number one, the claim payer ID changed, because they're now Dental Exchange and not Change Healthcare, and they are different sometimes. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, is depending on who you're going through, some of them are pickier on how the address is in there. So I was with an office at one point that it appeared like their claims were going through. They'd get back that it went, and then they weren't hearing back from the insurance, and it was because it wasn't getting to the right Blue Cross Blue Shield or the right Delta or whoever, because their addresses were not matching exact. And so if they had PO box, whatever, and they had the right claim payer ID, but the address had changed. So we get those notifications and somebody didn't change the address. We thought, well, it's okay. We have the right claim payer ID. All of those little pieces are how that the clearinghouse gets it to the right spot. Mm-hmm. And the fascinating part, you were talking about them all working together. I learned that even more so during the Change Healthcare crisis, when I talked to a number of my friends who, by the way, anyone who worked at Dental Exchange or Vine Trellis, they all need like, I don't know, a month off from that time.
They all looked this up. Like
they
were
working, no lie, 18-hour days. I talked to people that were just exhausted. Mm-hmm. They really went to bat for everybody during that. And the other thing to note is from Change Healthcare side, part of the reason why things are taking longer for dental is because dental is just a teeny part
of
who they are.
Big for them, yeah.
And so no offense, but I even talked to a local insurance company to figure out who they were using, what ID they were doing, because things weren't going through. And I talked to the woman there and she said, yeah, they didn't even talk to them for 3 weeks.
Wow.
So the people that were paying to use them, because dental was such a tiny part, they weren't focused on that. They were focused on the hospitals and the billions that were supposed to be going to the hospitals and medical facilities and things like that. Dental was just sort of like this little pile over in the corner. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I don't think we're seeing even GEHA and some of them that are still trying to go back to Change Healthcare or stick with them. They're not seeing that change. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I do plan on hitting up some of my friends that work for United Healthcare, which actually owns Change Healthcare, once it calms down, to see if they have any other insight to what's going to happen for dental. Are they going to pursue it or are they going to cut it completely? But we have to make sure that all of those details, when something doesn't go through, don't just hit the resend button. And that's one of the biggest.
Make sure you fix the reason.
You have to figure out the reason. And at times it will take you 4, 5, and 6 phone calls. I had an office that they kept having issues with the insurance saying they were out of network and they were in network. And one side says they show them right and the other said they showed them right. And I finally had to go up the ladder. There was a disconnect between the clearinghouse, the insurance company, and the information. And it was nothing the office was doing wrong. Mm-hmm. So you have to really make sure that you don't just, if you do find those problem claims, yes, find another way to get them to them. But make sure you figure out why.
Yeah.
You have to be checking all of those different boxes and making it part of your onboarding, making sure anybody who's touching the insurance knows who's your clearinghouse, who handles your attachments, which everybody for the most part goes through. A lot of them go through NEA now because Change Healthcare's attachments still are not back up and running.
Yep.
But knowing where that's going. Because it was amazing to me, I saw, you know, the Facebook chats are always fun during these things. And 2 months after the breach, people were saying, hey, my claims aren't going through. Does anyone know what's wrong? Like people that just, I don't know how they were out of the loop, but.
Yeah, and that's sad too, because that's money that's not getting to the business bank account. All of a sudden, they're in a situation, right. You know, it's like, oh crap, like we're gonna have to float ourselves on payroll until we get these claims through. And
that was a big issue. Initially, Optum was offering quote unquote loans to float money. And so I forwarded that to my one office and she called me back and she said, now they're an office that it was averaging $300,000 a month.
Oh yeah.
And not all of that was insurance based, but, mm-hmm. And they offered her a $1,500 loan. She's like, oh, that's going to help.
Not going to help.
You know, so
to get us there.
It affected. I watched doctors couldn't do purchases that they wanted to do during that. Mm-hmm. So it's our cash flow is very important, and any delay, even a week, can throw everything off.
So Colleen, let's talk about this. I want to shift it a little bit. So the most common, we talked about this, the most common thing that like front desk admin folks are saying the practice right now, I feel like, is that they just don't have time to get everything done. So I'm listening, you know, you're talking through like, hey, like you like if a claim doesn't go through, you've got to do the work to like check and make sure that you have the right provider ID or address or whatever that piece of information is that was wrong. But that takes time. So can you talk us through, like, let's say a listener's like, man, I'm feeling overwhelmed by, you know, all of my outstanding claims, patient AR, and they're trying to get on top of it. What would be like you're coming in to help someone. What would be like your initial, hey, let's start here and like make sure we knock this stuff, like the easy stuff to the hard stuff. Like, where would you start? And what are the basics of like how to get caught up? And then maybe even some suggestions on like how to structure time. Like, you're trying to juggle a lot of things, you know, so when do you do maybe like the bulk? Is there like an 80-20 where it's like, hey, this will get you 80% of the way. It's pretty easy, you know, submitting them virtually or digitally, letting kind of the software, you know, like we're partnered with Vine. So when you push the claims, when you load up the claims before you batch send them, it does like a quick scan and checks to make sure you haven't fat fingered provider ID and some things like that. Right. And it's good at catching stuff. Occasionally, you know, you'll have to go and correct some errors after the fact, but in general, it's really good. And then, but then what, yeah, talk us through like the basics. What would you go and tell someone that's like feeling like they're overwhelmed, they need to get caught up? Yep. Where would you start?
So the number one thing I'm finding is success, and I've been doing this for years, and I did it myself when I was in a practice, is giving anyone, and I'm talking the whole front administrative team, everyone needs to get a minimum of an hour to 2 hours a week that you act like they're not there. So we've all worked shorthanded. We've all worked with less people on vacation. We're more than willing to do that. We need to structure that into our week. If we're given an hour even of uninterrupted time, on average, you can get 2 to 3 times as much done as when you're getting interrupted to check a patient in, check a patient out, answer the phone. And so one of the biggest successes I found is whether you're two people, you know, if you're a single person, then you probably have to find it on a day off or stay later. But I worked, the last practice I worked, there was two of us at the front. And so we structured our week that we each got time that, number one, we weren't the first one to answer the phone. So I even go so far as structure who's first, second, and third to answer the phone. Mm-hmm. Because we always have, as I call them, the quick job McGraws. Mm-hmm. You always have that one person who has to answer it the first time, minute it rings. And then you have that person who focuses on what they're doing and doesn't even hear it. Mm-hmm. So by even doing little switches of, okay, Mary's in charge of the phone on Monday mornings from 8 to noon. So she's first, Susie's second, you know, John's third, however you want to put it. But also giving each person time away from the desk, whether it's physically at the desk and you just ignore them, whether they have another, hopefully it's a quiet office. Every office I've implemented this in, they usually fight it. They usually say, oh, we're not going to have time. But they've all come back, and when I say give it 21 days, it takes 21 days to form a habit, give it 21 days, they come back and say, wow, I got so much more done. And so the other success I've always had is structuring your day, your week. Even if you don't succeed in doing the structure every single week, I assign, and actually in the book that I have coming out, I have this in there, I would structure Monday mornings. Monday mornings, you're busy. So that would be, you know, if I was doing anything, I might be sorting the mail, or that's not a time to be calling insurance companies unless I'm verifying eligibility. Monday afternoons used to be my simple mail. And by that, I mean, I would sort through it and find the claims that were the easiest to enter without a lot of thought process. Mm-hmm. Tuesday morning was a quieter time. So that was a time that I would take to enter certain claims or do phone calls. So structuring your week, you know what your week looks like typically. Mm-hmm. And I will say it doesn't always go according to plan. Mm-hmm. And so you plan for what it typically should be and then obviously adjust from there. But that quiet time away is probably the biggest key so that you can get to those ones that you keep shoving to the side because you can't sit on hold or the doctor interrupted you because you were on hold for 25 minutes and he needed you or she needed you. And that's our biggest problem, is getting those problem claims. Just they get to 30 days and they get to 60 days and then they're hanging over our head.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea. I'm going to call it a power hour, right? It's like, I'm going to have my like RCM claim power hour where that's like all I do. And I'm zoning out from the world just to knock those out. Yeah, that's so good. 'Cause And then, Colleen, you told me this is actually a blind spot. I don't know. Can claims get to a point where like they won't get paid anymore? Like if they get old enough?
So if they haven't been, if you don't have proof that you've sent it, I mean, MetLife technically is 30 days. And it's
Really?
been
So you
that
have
way
to
for a
send it
long
within
time.
30 days.
They have to be sent initially within 30 days. Now, that being said, and it's strange, they don't necessarily hold everyone to that, but that's what's written. When I worked for them, it was a year filing limit, so I'm not quite sure when that changed. Most Medicaid plans are 90 days, and I'm hearing and seeing a lot more of 6 month versus a year. But that being said, if you go through your clearinghouse gives you proof that you at least sent it to them. And so, yes, you can fight it. But you have to keep that in mind. So I tell every office, you need a cheat sheet of who's the ones you have to double check fastest. So if you're shorthanded or if it's a busy week, making sure those short filing limits are the first ones you look at so they don't get missed or become a bigger fight.
Yeah, I love that. Any other tips you would give to someone who's like, "Hey, I'm trying to get caught up." I love the idea of power hour. I love the idea of structuring your time. Like, it is busy. There are so many jobs to be done in a dental practice, and so making sure, it's like the whole concept of having, a jar and you put the rocks in first and then fill it in with the sand, where getting money from patients and from insurance companies from claims is an absolute rock. Like, that is such a crucial part for a business to stay healthy so that we can keep running and taking care of patients and paying employees and team members. So it's absolutely a rock that needs to be prioritized. So I like that idea of like, hey, we got to plan out when are we going to do those activities. I think that's very wise. Otherwise, it can easily slip through the cracks because the other thing I'll say is I love talking about there's these quadrants where some things are urgent, meaning like a phone call, that's urgent. It's like someone's trying to talk to you now, and there are some things that are less urgent. And then on the other side of the quadrant, there are things that are like impactful, like really impactful, and things that are less impactful. And oftentimes in our jobs, we can end up falling into this like quadrant where we're doing the urgent things that are not as impactful. Because it just feels like we can just like knock them out and they're right there in front of us and they're noisy. Where insurance is something that is really important and impactful, but feels less urgent because there's no one like calling me or bugging me about those claims, but is one of the most important things. And so those are the scariest ones to have slip through the cracks from a business perspective. So just making sure we plan around them, I totally agree with that.
Well, and the other thing is making sure that one of the hardest discussions sometimes is making sure the doctor understands that importance.
Yeah, true.
One of the biggest struggles sometimes is, they're going to pull you to take care of the patients that are standing in front of them. They're going to pull somebody maybe back to clean a room to turn it over, but they're not realizing that's pulling you from getting money in the office until 3 weeks from now when they say, "Hey, where's my money?" So making sure that you know when, what are your essentials? So one of the other things I'll do with an office is I'll set up like you talked about the quadrants, or I recently heard it referred to as the daily fives.
Yeah,
Things
cool.
that are essential. And so, but I always set up a two-step backup plan, meaning two team members that are working together on the same types of things. So it might be my insurance coordinator and my accounts receivables team member, those that are doing the billing, they know each other's jobs. And so what are the essentials? Breakdowns have to get done. That's essential. Now, it may not be a full breakdown. It might be a shortened breakdown if the insurance coordinator is out, but at least getting those done. So making sure that you have those essential jobs covered. If, like when I used to go away, I had to train my other team member how to enter insurance. Now, she was newer, so she would stick to the easy claims, and if something was difficult, she set it to the side. But when I was on vacation, I didn't come back to all the mail was sitting there waiting to be entered. Having that almost two-step combined jobs can help. And then defining what has to happen every day and having that accountability and responsibility so that you don't lose that cash flow, because it's the easiest thing when the schedule's falling apart and the hygienists need things moved around and the doctor sees that's a visual for the doctors. they see their schedule full or empty, and they come up front and they're on the admin team to fill their schedule, forgetting that the person over here is getting their money from what they did a month ago. The other thing you can do is prioritize or lump it together. So you're only calling MetLife once. You can usually talk them into at least 5 or 6 patients.
Uh-huh.
Depends on the insurance company. Some of them are very strict. You get 2 or you get 3. But have your pile of questions and only call that insurance once. Don't call MetLife now and then Delta and sit on hold and then, oh, wait, I have another MetLife. Make sure you're organizing so that you're cutting down on how many times, as I say, you're yelling representative and hearing the rooster in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, we're coming up on this. Time flies by so fast.
I know.
So, Colleen, there's a question that we ask every single guest, and that is, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? So I'd love to hear your response to that. I also, just by the way, for all the listeners, Colleen kind of like sifted this out there. I want to make sure everyone hears it. She has a book coming out. What's the name of the book, Colleen?
A Mouthful of Insurance.
Sweet. Okay. That's awesome. That's a great name. And it's definitely worth buying the book. When is the official release date?
It should be the beginning of August. Where, like I said, we're having a few issues and I'm hoping that if things go well today, by the first part of August, it should be on Amazon. It'll be on Amazon.com. I'll have a Kindle, a paperback, and a hard copy, all different options for you. And it is what I feel is important as the insurance travels with the patient through the entire office, from the first phone call to getting paid or collections if we have to. And every person's role, not being insurance driven, but being insurance knowledgeable, so that we can have happy patients, collect while they're in there, and not have to follow up bill. That's my goal in the long run, is to get it all so that it's accurate. So I thank you for that shout out. I'm excited.
If you're looking for like a nuts and bolts, then like, hey, I want to up level myself. And here's the thing. I learn this all the time in my role. Like, I've been doing this, you know, this job now for 6 years, and I think I'm really good at it. But then I'll go listen to a podcast or I'll go read a book and I realize like, oh, wow, someone has figured out this like hack or this tool or this method that's an even better way than I've been doing for years. So definitely, like, if you're an RCM pro out there and you're like, oh, I've got it all figured out, like, going and consuming content like that is so helpful just to get perspective on, there might be some things where you can really up-level yourself. So check out the book. That's great. A Mouthful of Insurance. So Colleen, let's hear. And then if the release date and everything lines up with the podcast, listeners, just go ahead and check the show notes. If the book is out, we'll put the show notes in the show notes. We'll put a link to the book. Perfect. So I want to hear, Colleen, your response. What does growth in dentistry mean to you?
So I think it's a constant. For me, 30 years in this, I am still learning something new every day. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to continue to grow and not get stagnant. We have to be open to new ideas. I've been in this long enough. I've come from paper charts, and I wasn't quite pegboard. Those that are older will understand that. But I was paper charts and, you know, dot matrix printers and, you know, not electronic claims when I was first at MetLife were new. So we have to be willing to adapt and to change and do things that are uncomfortable too. And I think it's imperative because there are new things out there. And if you can find even that one thing that makes your life easier, and listening to others' viewpoint, that's fabulous. And that's, for me, it's a constant growth. It's a constant movement, but it's exciting because dental has not been boring. I mean, that's not one thing you can say. And insurance especially, they keep us on our toes. The amount of change from when I started in 94, August of 94, I got hired to be on the phones at MetLife, to now is huge. And so the growth is a positive thing. Most of what's happened has been good. There's new technology. I know there's a lot of complaints and, you know, there's things we don't like about any job, but if we look at the positives and look at the you know, the AI stuff is fascinating to me. I can't wait to see where it takes
us. Yeah, same. I'm hoping that it like blows the doors off of some of this revenue cycle management stuff, especially the process, and just makes it so much more streamlined. That's like what I'm crossing my
And it's supposed to. I have it on good authority. It should. But even looking at things like what Dental Intel does, what you guys do, years ago, that was a spreadsheet I had to fill out to get numbers like you're talking about at a click of a button. So that part of, you know, just all of those things is, I think that it just means being open to new opportunities.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you, Colleen, for joining me today and for chatting. And thank you, listeners, for joining once again, week after week. It is awesome to come and learn more about dentistry and grow together. Once again, my name's Steve Jensen, your host. This has been another episode of the Growth in Dentistry podcast. Thank you for joining and keep growing.